You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Welcome. It is election season, and the Los Angeles Unified School Board is on your ballot. If you live in the East San Fernando Valley, downtown, and its surrounding neighborhoods, or much of East Los Angeles, and listen up, because as USC education professor Julie Marsh points out, the seven elected school board members in LA move millions of dollars into local schools, and they set learning goals for nearly 500,000 kids.
There's a lot at stake with school board elections. I mean, they make very consequential decisions about what happens in our schools.
Now, there are two school board seats up for grabs right now, and KCRW's Robin Estrin talked to all of the candidates. She's here now to tell us what she's learned. Hey, Robin.
Hey, Steve.
So candidates in LA school board races have generally run on whether they support charter schools or not. That's been typical of the past. Charter school supporters pour a lot of money into those races, and then the teachers union typically spends a lot of money pushing back. Is that what's going on this time?
Well, these groups are spending on candidates, but not nearly as much as they have in the past. I mean, the LA school board race in 2017 was the most expensive school board race in U.S. history. And in the last race in 2020, outside political groups spent at least $15 million on two seats. Here's Julie Marsh again.
And so these elections often end up being a proxy war for sort of charter union disagreements. And I'm hearing very little of that. And I'm seeing spending is way down. And so I think it is a very unusual election.
For those who need a primer on school board elections, teachers unions and charter schools are typically at odds because charter school teachers aren't unionized. But like Marsh said, all of that charter school dynamic has really taken a back seat this election cycle. The pandemic has really shifted priorities in the district.
With the pandemic, I mean, we're hearing a lot about learning loss and falling test scores. I mean, is that then the main issue in this year's race?
Well, learning loss is certainly a huge issue in the district right now. I mean, students aren't showing up to school at high rates. And when it comes to testing, yes, reading and math scores have dropped significantly. But students are also struggling with their mental health, and the district is scrambling to hire and retain teachers and school counselors who can help. Meanwhile, student enrollment is plummeting. LA Unified has lost about 300,000 students since its peak 2 decades ago, and that extra pandemic aid the federal government sent to the district to help is expiring in 2025. That means there may be cuts on the horizon around programs and employment, and there's this looming threat of campus closures.
Big fish to fry for sure, so let's get to the candidates. You met all four of them. What were your impressions overall?
Well, they're all very focused on those issues I just mentioned, but what's interesting is that it also looks like power is shifting away from that kind of two-party system held by the pro-charter candidates and the pro-union candidates. There's a third party vying for power now, made up of powerful advocates from LA community groups and civic organizations. And that's certainly the case in the District 2 race, which impacts voters in parts of downtown LA and the adjacent neighborhoods north and east.
All right, so let's talk about the candidates. Who's running in that district?
Well, one candidate is Maria Brenes, and she's the executive director of a nonprofit called Inner City Struggle. Now, Inner City Struggle has been a powerful force over the last 2 decades in shaping district policies around educational equity and school funding.
The role I've played is a broker, a facilitator of breaking down that wall that existed for far too long between LAUSD, Beaudry, now, and the community.
When Brenes says Beaudry, by the way, she's talking about LAUSD's administration over on Beaudry Ave. Brenes is supported by the charter-backing billionaire Bill Bloomfield and SEIU Local 99, which is the union representing school staff that aren't teachers. And she's also endorsed by Monica Garcia, who holds the school board seat now and is termed out. It's kind of interesting. Brenes's husband, Luis Sanchez, was Garcia's chief of staff a decade ago, and he's also chaired the LAUSD Redistricting Commission, which redrew the district maps just last year.
All right, that's interesting. Who is Brenes running against?
Well, Brenes's opponent is Rocio Rivas. She's a policy advisor for current school board member Jackie Goldberg. Her work has focused on things like charter school accountability, early education and bilingual education, and she says she's leaning on that experience. I met her at a coffee shop in Lincoln Heights where she talked a little bit about that background.
And then I started working for Jackie Goldberg as her research and policy deputy, and that opened my eyes to the inside operations of the district. And I said, wow, we can do so much better if we can just change the policies, if we can just change how things are just done.
Rivas came into education policy in the early 2000s at a time when charter schools were starting to boom. And she's not a big fan of them. UTLA, the teachers union, is supporting her. Rivas says she supports a moratorium on new charter schools, but it's not on the top of her list coming out of the pandemic. She's talking more about oversight of those schools and says she doesn't want to demonize parents who are looking for opportunities for their kids.
All right, let's check out another district then. We go to the Eastern San Fernando Valley, where the current school board president is running for re-election. What's her deal?
Okay, so Kelly Gonez was elected to the school board in 2017 after working for the U.S. Department of Education under the Obama administration. She's been president of the board since 2020, and she says she's proud of the way she's worked through challenges, including the 2019 teachers strike, several leadership changes, and then, of course, the pandemic.
I think the school district has stepped up in pretty significant ways, whether it was feeding our families or closing the digital divide by providing internet and devices.
She also mentioned the board's success in, quote, safely bringing kids back to in-person learning, which some parents thought was way overdue by the time it happened. Gonez is endorsed by outgoing LA Mayor Eric Garcetti and several labor organizations, including UTLA. And that's worth noting because the teachers union endorsed her opponent when she ran in 2017. And because, like Brenez, Gonez's campaign was largely funded by Bill Bloomfield, who typically backs candidates who support charters.
All right. Well, who's Gonez's opponent?
Gonez is running against a high school Spanish teacher in Reseda named Marvin Rodriguez.
What I understand is what my students need. 18 years of being in the classroom have provided that experience for me. That's what I want to bring to the school board, an understanding of what it is that our students are going through.
Rodriguez's campaign has focused on upping teacher pay and increasing mental health support and resources for families. He doesn't have much policy experience, which might be why UTLA, Rodriguez's own union, has endorsed the current school board president.
It's interesting, Robin, there hasn't been that much mudslinging in this race, which is nice, obviously. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's a good question. For one, I think that fewer people are paying attention to this race because it defies that pro-charter, pro-union rivalry that we talked about earlier. But LA is also kind of immune to the issues that have been heating up school board meetings in other parts of the country, you know, around topics like critical race theory and banned books. I asked Tony Thurmond, the state superintendent of public instruction, why he thought this race was quieter than usual.
And so I'm hopeful that people will stay focused on the issues of how do we support learning recovery for our students? How do we help our students overcome the trauma of the pandemic? Those are the issues that we need to focus on rather than anything that's going to be divisive or attacking each other.
It's a nice concept.
Yeah.
So it's important to note that Thurmond is also on the ballot next month in a runoff against the California Republican Party's pick, Lance Christensen.
Interesting twists and turns for sure in the school board races. KCRW's Robin Estrin reporting for us. Robin, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
And by the way, to learn more about what's on the ballot this year and how you can vote, check out our California Midterm Voter Guide. It's at the website, kcrw.com/election. Coming up, Iranian protests are happening on the streets of LA, thousands of miles away, with calls for human rights and change. That's yours in a moment.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More of Greater LA Now on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Over the weekend, thousands of people took to the streets of downtown Los Angeles to protest Iran's government and its brutal crackdown on demonstrations in that country.
Anybody who has a mother, a sister, a daughter, a cousin, any woman, they should be out fighting right now for women's lives in Iran.
What began as a protest of one woman's death, Mahsa Amini, at the hands of the morality police, has now grown to more than a month of protests within Iran and around the world. Especially vocal are the Iranian diaspora here in L.A., the largest group of Iranians outside of that country. And with us to talk about local reaction to what's happening inside Iran is Lisa Daftari, the Iranian-American journalist and editor over at the Foreign Desk. Lisa, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
L.A. has such a large population, obviously, of Iranians and Iranian Americans. Talk a little bit about how the situation over there is affecting folks here at home.
Yeah, you know, many people who have come out of Iran either at the start of the revolution or even before tell me they've been waiting 43 years for this moment. And I know there have been protests throughout the last four decades, but this time around, it's different. People really feel hopeful. They feel like there's a chance. They feel like the time has come. And really, the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back, this horrific murder of a 22-year-old girl, Mahsa Amini, while it was incredibly tragic, I mean, words cannot express what this means in terms of anyone's fight for human rights, I mean, on any level. But this now became the perfect symbol of their fight. Because for 43 years, Iranians inside and outside Iran have been trying to show the world the difference between the people of Iran and this horrific repressive government that totally does not match them, does not give them their basic freedoms, and that's all they're fighting for. So the counterparts of those protesters here on the streets of Los Angeles really feel a connection. They want the people of Iran to know that they are marching side by side, that there is full solidarity and support of the movement. And Steve, I'll tell you one more thing. The biggest difference of this time around and all the other protests is the level of unity and the oneness of the message. This movement is not tied to any specific political group or leader. There's no argument between who's going to be the future of Iran. The only thing people are focused on is getting this regime out, and they want to be very clear about that. They don't want any reforms. They don't want a change of this particular president or this particular supreme leader. They want this regime out, and they're very clear about what they want, and that is basic freedom, and that's what they're trying to show the world. So the fact that so many thousands of people have gathered, whether it's in Berlin or in Canada or here in the United States, in Los Angeles, in our huge expatriate community, it's just a sign of this level of support that they have had for 43 years. And now they're really hoping this can be the tipping point to overthrow this regime.
How tenuous, Lisa, is politically the regime in Iran? We're talking about, obviously, the supreme leader, the Sharia law that's there, the president that's there. How strong a hand do they have?
Yeah, great question. Because for years, the lobbyists of the regime here in the United States who have been able to kind of flip the narrative a bit have been telling Americans and the mainstream media and the White House that there are a lot of people in Iran that support the government. And whenever we would see protests, they would again hijack the message and say, "Ah, those are just the cool kids of Tehran. They're out on the streets, and it's just like seeing, you know, a snippet of Los Angeles or New York City and saying that's all of America." And you can't do that. But now they truly want to show that these protests are not limited to just the urban areas. There are even in rural areas, even in clerical cities like the city of Qom, where a lot of these madrasas are, the Islamic clerical schools are. We're seeing protests on the streets, which is extremely telling. The Achilles heel of this government has always been the people of Iran. It hasn't been, you know, whoever's in the White House or the European Union threatening them with sanctions. They've always feared the people. And that's because that's exactly how they came into power, was people on the streets. And that is exactly why we're saying they have dwindled in power. What we're seeing right now on the streets of Iran is making the regime extremely fearful. And the people are getting their messages across. They're being very effective.
Will the protests continue here in L.A.? Do you know how far this can go? Obviously, the protests are still happening in Iran. And by the way, there have been protests in the past in Iran, especially against, who was it, Ahmadinejad, who was there, right? Who was, I mean, pretty hardcore.
Yeah, so to answer the first part of your question, yes, there are protests even through the end of November that I've seen flyers out for, one in Beverly Hills, a couple in downtown, all over. So I think as long as, again, their message, the expatriate community's message to the people of Iran is, as long as you're going to be out on the streets, we will be there side by side with you, supporting you all the way. And secondly, you know, we saw protests over the last 43 years, and each time the catalyst may have been different. So in 2009, that you pointed to was the fraudulent election. They called it the Green Revolution. Some even called it the Twitter Revolution, because it was the first time that, because of social media, we saw the faces and the actual identities of the Iranians who were coming out, and they looked just like us, and they were asking for freedoms. This time around, there is no really confusing the message. This has probably been the longest the protests have lasted. There have been in more cities and provinces across Iran than we've ever seen before. And we've seen support across the board. So there are a lot of women on the front lines and a lot of young women who are carrying this message. But there are also men out there. There are young, middle-aged, old people. People are truly showing their support. And again, if I can just emphasize one thing that the American audience should focus on in this fight, is that they are very united in their message. Now, I say this as a journalist who's been doing this for many, many years, covering the stories of people all throughout the world, particularly in the Middle East, because, you know, the languages I speak and the access that I have to the people on the ground there. But this is truly a pure movement that has not been hijacked by any nefarious identities or groups or individuals. This is solely a movement for human rights, and the Iranian people want to keep it that way, both in the expatriate community here in Los Angeles and inside Iran.
Well, from a journalism standpoint, there are no two sides, both sides to human rights and to democracy.
Exactly right.
Lisa Daftari, editor of The Foreign Desk, thanks for coming on and talking with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for covering this very important story.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. About 2 weeks left to vote in the midterm elections, and Democrats are fighting one another down in Orange County. Now, OC has historically and geographically removed itself from LA County, but that's not stopping Democrats in the bigger county from getting involved in politics to the south. And now there are calls for the state party to step in. Gustavo Arellano grew up and lives in OC. He's a columnist for the LA Times. He's one of our regulars here on GLA. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So the two people at the center of this are Irvine Mayor Farah Khan and City Councilman Larry Agron. Tell us a little bit about both of them.
Okay, we've been talking about Larry for years here on Greater LA on the OC line. This is arguably one of the people that made modern day Irvine. He's been on the city council as both council member and mayor for almost 40 years at this point. Used to be a darling of progressives, kind of his popularity ebbs and flows. Farah Khan, on the other hand, she's been in Irvine politics for a while, but very much represents the quote-unquote new Irvine, more diverse, a little bit more progressive. And so they, unsurprisingly, they have clashed over a lot of issues during their time together on the city council, and also arguably trying to get control of the Irvine City Council.
Both Democrats, though.
Oh, yeah.
So then how and why are LA Democrats getting involved in local politics in Irvine?
That is a huge mystery to me, because historically, LA County doesn't care about Orange County politically. They just dismiss us all as a bunch of, you know, the old stereotypes of super conservative birchers, whatnot. They don't really pay attention to the Democratic side of things, because historically the Democratic Party in Orange County has been pretty weak. But obviously over the last couple of years under OC Democratic Party Chair Ada Briseño, Orange County is becoming more and more purple. And so what people are seeing in Irvine, it's a big city. So the Democrats, I guess in LA, they're thinking, well, you know, if we could get one of our own, give them a little bit more protection, that's going to help out our own cause. And I guess in this case, LA Democrats, they've said that they're saying through their money that their own is, if not so much Farrah Khan, then definitely being against Larry Agron.
So in a place like Orange County, Gustavo, that's been hewing purple in recent years, why would the Democrats want to waste so much time and money fighting one another?
That's what Democrats do best. What's the word? Intracene warfare or something like that, where it's liberals versus progressives versus moderates versus socialists versus all of this. And look, Larry Agron was a longtime progressive on the city council. Farrah Khan, she's definitely not a moderate. She's been pushing the city council in various ways. And it's interesting with the Democrats in Los Angeles, they have created a political action committee that has spent $55,000 to support Farrah Khan through mailers and all of that, and $100,000 opposing Larry Agron, to the point of making websites accusing him of all sorts of allegations. It is quite a waste in money, but obviously that's what the Democratic Party considers in Los Angeles to have to do something about that.
All right. Well, as I mentioned, the Democrats of Greater Irvine are asking for the state party to step in. How likely are the California Democrats to step in and get involved in this just with 2 weeks to go?
All of these leaders of Democratic parties, countywide and statewide, this has been a headache for them for years, just like the squabbling tribes, if you will. So the Democratic Party, the statewide, I mean, it remains to be seen, because obviously they have other bigger issues to deal with. Although, of course, California is reliably blue, but they still have to do the get out the vote efforts. So having two Democrats fight each other right now, maybe is not going to be the biggest priority. But if they want to move forward, they're going to have to squash this. So Ada Briseño, she's already said, she told the Voice of OC that she's going to speak to the president of the LA Democrats up in Los Angeles to say, hey, let's make sure this is not happening. We need to be united right now. We can't be fighting each other at a time where the Republicans could very well take over the House and even the Senate.
So let's pick up from there. Could this affect other races that Democrats are trying to either win or hold on to in OC?
This is a very local problem with Irvine, but it's emblematic of the bigger issue that the Democratic Party in Orange County has faced, which is, again, liberal versus progressive. You have Democrats versus Democrats against each other on the Orange County Board of Supervisors race, Vincent Sarmiento versus Kim Bernice Wynn. You have it in Santana, where you have like someone like Manny Escamilla, who's more of a burner, going up against David Peñalosa, who's a little bit more moderate of a Democrat. So this is, I think, just a reminder for Democrats that it used to be that their biggest enemy in Southern California was a Republican Party. Now the biggest party, the Democrats, seems to be Democrats themselves. So that can't possibly be healthy for getting more representation and winning more elections in the future.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist at the LA Times. Gustavo, as always, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, finding community in Greater LA. It's more than just an Instagram page. It's actual physical meeting, mingling, doing things. That's tomorrow on GLA. Let us know how you're feeling. KCRW.com/GLA. And subscribe to the podcast, too, won't you? Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, John Meek, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Christine Camito, and Christian Bordahl. All had hands on the show today. I'm Steve Chitakis. Have a great night.